This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Remember the good old days? Family gatherings, everybody would gather around the projector and Dad would load up the old home movie reels. I'll show you what I mean. Somebody get the lights? Yeah. There we go. Oh, there's the birthday boy. He's going to blow out almost all the candles. And now he's crying. Well, anyway, those days are gone forever, and you're more likely to shoot video with your phone and throw it up on Facebook. But, of course, many of those old home movies are still around. And a group of local film buffs has invited people to bring in their celluloid memories every year at the Triangle Home Movie Day. This year it's going to be held at the North Carolina State Archives Auditorium in Raleigh. It's going to be on Saturday, in fact. And here to tell us more is Skip Elsheimer. He is the creator of AV Geeks. And Skip Elsheimer is organizer of Home Movie Day as well. Skip, welcome back.
Always Frank. Thanks for having me.
Marcia Orgeron is here, associate professor in film studies program at North Carolina State, and it's good to have you back, Marcia, as well.
Thank you so much.
So, Skip, take us back now to the origins of Home Movie Day. Where did this idea come from?
Well, it was early 2000s, and there were a bunch of film archivists who realized that the film archiving world was turning its back on a very important part of our cultural history. They realized that 35-millimeter films, 16-millimeter films were being covered. Archives were keeping track on those. But they realized that people were getting rid of their home movies. They were throwing them away. They were making copies on VHS and just getting rid of them and realized that that was an important cultural history that was being lost. So they teamed up and created Home Movie Day, which was a way to kind of educate the population to say, hey, these are important cultural records. These are important for you as your family, as documents, but also as a way to, if you hold these films for a period of time, then you get to see something interesting about our past.
So tell us about the event. What are the requirements? How do you put it out to people?
Well, first off, anyone can come and bring their 8, Super 8, or 16-millimeter films, and we will have a look at them and assess their condition and see if it's safe to project them. And if whoever brings them is interested, we will project at least one reel. And it's a really fun event because we encourage people to talk about what we are projecting. So it takes place in this great auditorium on Jones Street in downtown Raleigh at the State Archives. And typically the person whose family films usually are being projected will talk about, oh, you know, that's great aunt whoever, and talk about the, you know, what's happening on screen. And so it becomes a very interactive, participatory conversation about whatever personal stories are being told. So that's one mode of participation. The second mode is just to come. Even if you don't have home movies of your own, it's pretty interesting to see what other people bring. And we never have any idea what people are going to turn up with. So
it's been amazing in the past. You would think that, you know, watch somebody's home movies that you don't know anybody, it's kind of boring. But actually, it's fascinating because you get to see things, you get to see how people are. You're trying to figure out, well, what are these people doing? Is this a reunion? What is this? And where are they at? What is this amusement park that they're at?
Right, lots of world travels. And then also some of the most interesting films are about local events. We had someone bring a film one year of opening day at Cameron Village with the ribbon cutting. And, you know, to see it then and to see it now. And so there's lots of recognition that happens in the audience, too, not just for people who, you know, have brought the films, but also people who are there spectators.
And it's a real time capsule, too. But now, what time period are we talking about? Because this is basically the 8-millimeter or Super 8 film. So there's a real particular time window.
Or 16-millimeter, which actually was invented and proliferated in the 1920s. So we have had 1920s footage. That's much rarer. Obviously, the older the footage, the less likely.
And then last year we had somebody who had just shot the film. So people are still shooting home movies. Yeah.
But I mean, 16-millimeter, relatively expensive. It got to be kind of a mass product when you could cheapen it and basically cut the film stock in half, right? 8-millimeter.
Exactly. And certainly I would say that it skews towards 1950s, 1960s. And last year we were just commenting on the fact, talking before the show, there were a ton of 1970s films. And we never know, you know, what we're going to get. So it's a grab bag. But definitely post-war, there was a huge boom in home movie making.
And there certainly are tropes, it seems to me. We could talk about this academically, but there are these things that always happen, like the kids mug into the camera. And yeah, grandparents who sit stock still because they think this is a photograph. And it's
right.
And then dad screaming from behind the camera while he's, no, move, these are movies, right? That whole thing happened.
Yeah, or the the kind of bashful, like, don't stop taking a picture of me, stop. Right. And so much so that we actually have created this thing called Home Movie Day Bingo, where we pass out cards to the audience, and people look for these tropes. They look for these commonalities, Christmas, beehive hairdos.
Bell bottoms,
and you win valuable prizes.
For your styles.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about some of the films that you saw last year, for instance. I know, Marsha, one of them, there was a marriage. Was it a wedding that stuck out for you?
Yeah, there was, we always get wedding footage, at least one or two reels. Obviously, that's a very important event in someone's life, and so it's typically documented in some way and, filmed quite often. So somebody brought a wedding footage that they had not seen ever.
It was 30 years ago, and they were watching their wedding, which they had never seen before.
And the commentary on that must have been delicious.
Well,
right?
It was. It was very moving. And then we were, there was another film that somebody brought from a wedding in Belhaven, North Carolina, from 1972, and he was narrating it. It was also very touching, but also making, really kind of great jokes about what was happening on screen. And so, again, we tend to have these moments that are very touching and very moving, and also very funny, in part because of the participation of the audience.
And the other thing that you have to consider is when you shot these movies, I mean, it's not like today I can pull out my phone. I don't even know that somebody's shooting video, right? But you knew when you were on camera during with Super 8 and 8mm, right?
Yeah.
And that can present some pretty funny moments on film as well.
I think so. I think what's interesting is if you have someone who's going through a party or through a reunion and is walking through it and you see people doing what they're doing, then they suddenly look up and they're like, oh, there's something there. There's a camera there, and they respond to the camera or to the person.
And with Kodachrome, you're responding to the lights. Remember the antlers?
Exactly. I mean. Yeah, the blinding Christmas footage with the giant floodlights, yeah.
Well, and you also had a limited amount of time. You were shooting, around 3 minutes for a 50-foot reel. And so today, there's no boundaries. So people can shoot for hours and hours and hours. But in this time period, you had a much more limited capacity for a reel. And so you tended also to be more economical because of, the cost.
Right.
Which leads to funny moments like people actually treating it as though it were a kind of stop action film or something.
Right.
We actually had some stop motion animation last year, which was really cool, from the early 1970s, from a Charlotte high school that was shot, someone doing all these tricks with basically animated movement. And so people also were very kind of formally experimental with their home movies. And there was a whole amateur culture of magazines teaching people how to film and tricks they could do. So often we get films that are really much more adventurous than you might think.
Are there people making sort of their own film, their own feature films?
Basically, there's narratives. There's people that have created narratives. One of the films a couple years ago, somebody took the song Get a Job, and this was in the early 60s, and he made his own narrative of that, where it was basically showed this guy working all these different really lousy jobs. And so he was – I believe he was 13 or 14 when he made it, and it shows this guy – haplessly going from job to job, and it shows him working up on a roof and then falling off the roof. It shows him at the very end, he's actually a soldier who's carrying a casket that has a wooden Hitler in it. And so it's just this weird, funny narrative.
But it's interesting that there might be so little of it. Maybe it's the cost of the technology, because these days kind of everybody can be a documentary filmmaker with a laptop and a phone, basically. And there's a lot more of it, and perhaps not always to our advantage. But then apparently, was it the cost that kept people from experimenting and becoming their own sort of documentarians or feature filmmakers, do you wonder?
I think that the cost certainly, and also there's not a sense of immediacy.
Right.
So you have to shoot it, then you have to have it processed, then eventually in a couple of weeks you'll get it back. The immediacy that we have now is very different.
Yeah, and I mean, even the fact, I mean, one of the things we have on the bingo cards is underexposed or overexposed film, because, of course, you didn't know what you had shot until you got it back from the lab. And sometimes you didn't shoot with the right lighting, and that's just the way it went. So you lost that birthday, wedding, what have you.
But even with the cost, it's surprising to see how much material is out there and is constantly being found. I get contacted all the time by people who'd found a shoebox somewhere, and they're like, I didn't realize that my parents had shot this, but there's this whole backstory of our family that now we have access to.
And speaking of the issue of the shoebox, I think one of the most important things that we want people to know, whether they come to Home Movie Day or not, is that in the way you store your films, if you do have films, has a lot to do with how long they will last. And the most important thing you can do is keep them in a cool and dry place. People tend to put mementos sometimes up in attics or in basements, and that's the worst place that you could put.
Yeah, the variation in temperature and humidity is really bad for film.
So under your pillow, better idea.
Yeah, there we go. Okay. Yeah, sleep with it.
But, you know, the technology was really in flux. I mean, if you think about the movement to 8mm really was initially, was it not, to help the film industry. They had 35mm film that they were going to shoot in, and that definitely was going to go on the screen. But when they wanted to shoot little practice shots, it got expensive. So if you could make the film stock
8mm. Right, that's one of the things that pushed it. But Kodak was really good at trying to take whatever they had to the consumer, and they really had an amazing model built on that.
And the whole idea of home movies, you know, has basically been around since the birth of cinema, and people were talking even, you know, in the first decade or two about the potential of film to document people's lives. It was an issue of cost and practicality and flammability of film.
And one of the first Lumiere films, they were the pioneers, the French pioneers of film, is basically a home movie. It's them feeding a baby. And so that's more than 100 years old.
Was the technology in flux much in that period, in the sort of the home movie 8mm period? And do you see it on the screen? Is there a difference between something shot in 1950, apart from how well preserved it was, and something shot in the early 70s?
Well, the color technology is what. Sometimes colors – there was Kodachrome, which you talked about earlier, was an amazing film stock that has vibrant colors. It's what people call the Christmas of film technology, because Christmas just is beautiful when you see it. But then there were cheaper film stocks that came out, and other companies came out with film stocks, which the colors are not so great. They don't hold up so well, or they didn't capture it so well. So it's interesting. You see a film from 1940, it looks beautiful, so crisp. And then you watch one from the 70s, and it looks muddy, and it just doesn't have that vibrance.
Can you see what's the difference between films that we shoot today technologically, obviously, but just in terms of the content, the aesthetic that's sort of applied by the person behind the camera between that and film?
I think it's the same motivations. People want to capture important events in their lives, and cameras in your phones make it so much easier to do that now. What they do with it afterwards is kind of interesting and different, and that's why it's fascinating to see the rise of a YouTube and a Facebook and the decline of a Kodak, because they were both doing the same thing, exactly the same thing.
Massifying, capturing,
taking the moments that you think are important that you want to show your friends and your family. One model is doing very well and the other model is not doing so great.
And it's also an economy of scale. I mean, obviously exactly what Skip was talking about, where you would project these films for, you know, 4, 5, 10, maybe 20 people in your living room versus putting them online and, you know, thousands and maybe even millions of people have the opportunity to see them as well.
But I would also think that there are sort of qualitative differences in terms of, or the way you're going to discriminate between what's important. So when, you know, birthdays happen once a year, I'm going to spend the money and the time on that versus the cat that I just saw on the sidewalk that's going to go up on Facebook.
You'd be surprised how much home movie footage I have of cats.
Actually, I'm not.
I have proof that cats exist before the internet, and there's quite a bit. It depends on the filmmaker, really. What was important to them. I mean, the vast majority are going to be special events, but, you know, sometimes day in the lives show up.
And actually, to me, some of the best footage is travel footage, because that's another occasion that warranted, you know, bringing out the film and the cameras and taking it with you. And so we have seen, come through Home Movie Day, incredible travel footage from all over the world. I mean, Asia and Africa, and just incredible, really meaningful footage that has real historical value, too, from a lot of different perspectives, depending upon how you want to look at the film and given what it depicts.
So. Well, plus what's interesting is the duplication. So the way we used to travel in the United States is take a month off and drive across the United States. And the places that it would hit would always be the same, you know, Yosemite, California, Grand Canyon, all that. But it's interesting to see that's how people used to vacation in the 50s.
Well, that's another question, whether or not historians or anthropologists could take a look at these. And obviously, you're looking at a particular segment of this. I mean, they could afford a camera. So
that's
one cut right there. But are there things that you could learn as a scholar about the
Certainly.
Social order and practices?
Absolutely. I mean, there's been a kind of academic trend, I would say, in the past 20 years to look at home movies as serious objects of studies, both from the perspective of film history, as well as people, you know, working in anthropology and sociology and a lot of other different disciplines who have found that these films contain either intentional or unintentional value. I mean, if you think about the fact that people, you know, shot footage on the streets of their hometowns even, you know, what did they capture that's gone? And how else do you have documentation of that? Oftentimes, home movies, you know, contain really essential information that you can't find other places.
And the more those films last, the longer that they're around, the more important they become.
Yeah. And so that's one of the reasons I think another important awareness-raising mission of Home Movie Day is it's absolutely wonderful to have your films transferred into a digital form, you know, to make them accessible so it's easy to stick a DVD in your DVD player and play it. But keep the film if you can. Mm. Do not just dispose of it. You have not preserved your film for a lifetime. What you've given yourself is access to something for this interim period that we have DVDs, which is not going to be forever.
And that's one of the things about Home Movie Day that we do that's different than the other ones, because there's 100 different Home Movie Day events happening this year.
5 continents, 18 countries.
18 countries, yes. It's a high watermark. Anyways, what we do is we actually transfer the films and we give everybody that participated, we give them a DVD. So they can share it with
because
with
that does
friends.
Sound like one of the problems is that people who went from film to VHS then were asked to go to DVD. And at that point, you're probably saying, all right, hold it, stop,
yeah.
Right?
Well, and then the other problem is in more than one situation, I've heard of people who accidentally recorded over their VHS.
Ooh.
And they don't have the film anymore.
Right. Or had their films transferred to VHS, threw away the film, the saddest scenario, because they thought, well, now I have access for a lifetime. And, you know, how many people even have VHS players now?
Well, that's it. Yeah.
And you can always, you know, if you think about it, if you hold up a piece of film, you know, you can always see that image. So you have access to it. Good luck doing that, you know, with VHS or with DVD.
Which degraded a lot faster than film
exactly.
as well. So is there a film out really of a man who witnessed Abraham Lincoln's assassination?
I actually just stumbled across that. That was a TV show. So it was a TV show where the guy who witnessed Abraham Lincoln's assassination, it's on YouTube.
Oh, okay. So we're they're not going to show up. So do you ever
it's not
bring,
really a home movie.
Do you ever bring – I don't need to know any more about that. Do you ever bring your own home movies?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We have, although, you know, it's become, you know, we're very fortunate. We've always had a very strong audience. And so our desire, of course, is that the people who bring films have their films shown. So the first couple of years, you know, we did bring our own family films and projected them. But as the event has kind of grown, our priority, of course, is getting people to see at least one reel. And if we have more time, you know, we're happy to have people stay and come through the queue again and put another reel on for
And people
them.
Stay the entire event too, which is really great because they're interested in their materials, but they're also interested in seeing what other people are bringing. And it's really kind of a fun community event.
How many people generally show up?
I think last year we had around 100
wow.
people, you know, which you know, felt like just about
that
the
was
right
good.
Amount.
That was really good.
Anybody see like their family member in somebody else's film? Or
not yet.
Not yet. It's interesting when that happens, though. I think there's a popular home movie somebody shot of the opening week at a Disneyland, and they posted it online, and somebody recognized themselves in it.
Wow.
It was Steve Martin. He recognized himself as one of the little vendors in one of the films. So that connection takes place.
Always a great event. Thanks so much for being on the program today.
Thank you.
Skip Elsheimer, creator of AV Geeks, one of the organizers of Triangle Home Movie Day. Marcia Orgeron is an associate professor in the Film Studies program at North Carolina State, also helped to help organize Home Movie Day. Triangle Home Movie Day this Saturday, North Carolina State Archives Auditorium in Raleigh, 1 to 4. To find out more, you can go to about Triangle Home Movie Day. Go to avgeeks.com. Up ahead, we're going to do some square dancing with the 5-point rounders. Stay tuned.